Martha, could you just repeat what you just said about, you know, once you get into the zone of miracles?
Sure. Lisa and I were just talking about this. It's almost like there are different radio frequencies, and our culture really doesn't have much credence for the frequency of the mystery and miracles. But when you start to allow it into your life and you start noticing it, talking about it, focusing on it, and you sort of hold that frequency for a while, the miracles just start popping up right and left. It gets so wild.
Yeah,
we've all experienced that.
Absolutely. And since we are recording this, I just want to fill in, you know, anyone who's going to be listening, who I am and what we're here to do today. My name is Reba Riley. I am a writer for Pathios.com, which is a faith and interfaith website. I write about spiritual healing and health. And I'm also the author of an upcoming book with the title Post-Traumatic Church Syndrome. I'm sure we'll get around
I
to
have
that. I'm sure we could all raise our hands. And it is it's a memoir of my 29th year that I spent because I was chronically ill, and my chronic illness made me look at my spiritual desolation,
mm-hmm.
and say, okay, well, I can't do anything about this. Can't do anything about this physical illness right now, but I can maybe attack this spiritual illness, post-traumatic church syndrome. And so I set out on this crazy adventure through 30 religions before I turned 30, which is, you know, in retrospect, a chronically ill person undertaking a project like that is just, you know, kind of crazy.
And that's what I did. Undertaking a project like that is kind of impressive.
impressive. So that was three years and 4 months ago today that I started that project. And then just miracle after miracle has happened since then and brought me, I would say, straight to this day. And I'd like to also share this story with anyone who's a fan of Martha and Lisa. I have to say, you know, this is the first time I've connected with them live, but Martha has been rescuing me for years. Her books have just been a lifeline for me in many ways, both of the, you know, physical illness and spiritual desolation that I experienced. And 8 years ago, I had read one of Martha's books, and I cut out her picture from one of the magazines she was in, and I pasted it to a vision board, and I said, someday I will be well, and someday I will tell Martha. And I just did that like 10 minutes ago. So everyone out there, everybody out there, this is amazing. And these women are healers. They are miracle workers of the most beautiful kind. So I'm so thrilled to be here. And for Pathios.com, because we're talking about spiritual health and healing, that is what I want to do. I just want to have a conversation. I was on your beautiful call about your upcoming virtual workshop, which we want to cover for sure. And so I just want to have this conversation about spiritual health and healing because I think it's a conversation that isn't being had enough in our culture. And you guys are the people to have it with. So if that's okay with both of you, I've got a couple of prepared questions, but I am ready to go with wherever the magic is.
That's kind of how we roll.
Yeah.
Exactly. So who would like to open by telling me about this great virtual workshop that you have coming up?
Lisa, why don't you take it away?
Okay, sure. So we are teaching, an 8-week virtual workshop called Coming Home to Your Spirit. That'll be a series of teleclasses. And it's been born of a series of conversations that Martha and I have been having over a period of years now, where both of us kind of come from a world where there's not a lot of room to have these kinds of spiritual conversations. You know, both of us have felt kind of, I don't know, it sounds victim-y to say oppressed, but compressed maybe, or sort of put in a box with regard to our own experiences of spiritual life. And so both of us got really excited about the idea of like, okay, so maybe we aren't going to write a book about this right now, but what if we got out there with the people that are really ready to be on the leading edge of the conversation about what's happening with the shift in consciousness that we're experiencing. We're experiencing it personally, and we're watching it happen to the culture, and we're recognizing this need for people to have communion and soul community and really radical openness about what is happening. So we're going to be talking about that. What is the new consciousness? And what does it mean? What are the signs and symptoms of spiritual awakening? What are the stages of development of spiritual awakening? So that you kind of can assess for yourself, where are you? Where are you going? And part of our hope of kind of the first class of the program is to normalize that experience for people, because I know for both of us, when it started happening, we felt kind of crazy. And other people thought we were kind of crazy. And it started making us do things that looked really crazy. Like, I was a doctor who quit my job in medicine, and people are like, you're crazy. So we really wanted to help people understand what it means to be part of that shift in consciousness. And instead of resisting it, because there's the ego will come up with a lot of fear and resistance to keep you from leaning into the spiritual path. And yet that's okay. There's no judgment of that. But there's a way when you do it in community, and when somebody else is holding that frequency of miracles that Martha was talking about, where you can really start to lean into that. So we're going to be talking about things like accessing your inner guidance, like how do you learn to trust your intuition? How do you learn to start accessing things like spirit guides or really tuning into that frequency so that synchronicities can start to happen in your life that give you sort of the cosmic yes and the cosmic no? And how do we manage the fear that comes up when we get the cosmic no, right? When you're getting spiritual guidance that's telling you, you know, you need to end this relationship, or this job is making your body chronically ill, and you know what you need to do. And this is part of what I've written a lot about in Mind Over Medicine. When you know what you need to do to be optimally healthy, to be optimally vital, and you're terrified. So my next book is called The Fear Cure, because I recognized after writing Mind Over Medicine that until we deal with that fear and resistance that comes up from the ego, that keeps us from leaning into what our soul is trying to guide us to do, or call it divine guidance, whether you believe it's internal or external. Martha and I think, believe it's both. How do we deal with that? So one of the classes is called Scared Bleepless. You're on the right track.
I love it.
And we're talking about, you know, how to live a life where you're aligned with your purpose, where there's something that you trust more than your ego, so that you're willing to let go, to take the ego out of the driver's seat when it comes to making your decisions, so that something richer can take the lead in your life. And it requires getting to this place because in the beginning it feels like blind faith, but at some point you get to the peace of trusting something else, call it the divine, call it your soul. You trust something else more than you trust your ego to help you make the right decisions and lead the life that you're supposed to lead. And these things affect our relationships, so we're going to be talking about relationships and how do we navigate our relationships when we're on the spiritual path, because they can be the ultimate teacher, but it also can be full of challenges to the ego. And then how to sort of practice surrender, how to really let go of the resistance to letting the soul take the lead, and how to engage in spiritual practices that will sustain that part of you so that you can start to hear the guidance more, you can start to sense what's aligned for the highest good or what's aligned with divine will. And then we're going to have a lot of fun really doing a lot of Q&A and getting a lot of interactive feedback from people, doing some spot coaching where people can kind of get on the hot seat with Martha and I. And we're going to tell a lot of miracle stories, because as Martha said, when we tell our miracle stories, we tune into the frequency of miracles. And it's like we open a door and we say, look, this is really what's happened for Martha and I. And then we're going to invite other people to tell us their miracle stories. And it's like all of a sudden there's a part of you that opens to, wow, unless you think we're crazy or lying, which hopefully you'll give us
hopefully
the benefit
not.
Of the doubt.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically, I was just going to say, if you keep self-helping as much as we have self-helped, some weird stuff is going to start happening to you. Don't worry. You're not in it alone, and we're going to talk about it, and we're going to have, not only are we going to have fun with it, but self-help goes beyond anything you thought it could and becomes a wild, magical adventure. So that's where we're going. And Reba, I'm excited to hear your questions today.
Oh, well, I've got like loads and loads of them. Actually, a couple of the themes that I had came up while Lisa was talking, and I have to start by telling you what the name I came up with for that divine guidance in my own life is the Godiverse. That's what I use because the word God because God was too loaded. You know, it's a very loaded
right.
word for a lot of people. Universe, for me, it felt too far away. Source didn't feel, it just, nothing felt right. It took me quite a while. For a while, I called God Sam. But but the Godiverse is what I use, is the word I use. So I may kind of insert that because it's so a part of, you know, who I am. I heard two things, Lisa, that you were talking about. I heard the community aspect and then the spiritual practices. And these are both things that I have a post-traumatic church syndrome online community. And I said that I was going to be speaking with you guys today. And they asked, what do they think spiritual community looks like, you know, outside of this very rigid thing that we've, you know, kind of been brought up to believe this is what spiritual community is. It is here. It's in this building. It's with these certain people believing these certain things. What do you, maybe this question could go to Martha.
Sure.
What do you think spiritual community looks like outside of that?
It's so interesting because my doctorate was in sociology, and at a certain point when I was still a professor, a lot of students were coming to me and they were asking the strangest questions. They were saying, I feel like I'm supposed to be part of some sort of a transformation in the world. I've felt drawn to this my whole life. I feel connected to people that I don't even know. Sometimes more, I feel closer to them than my own family. And we're all supposed to be doing something, and what are we supposed to be doing? And I was like, I don't know. But I actually went to another sociologist, and I said, this weird phenomenon is happening to me, and I don't know why. The next time someone came into my office, I ran and got this other sociology professor, and I said, come in here. And I don't know this person. Here's what they're going to tell me. And then we went into my office, and I said, oh, go ahead. And the person told us, he just went down the line and said all the things that I thought. And so later this professor goes, well, if this is really weird, and if it's a real phenomenon, you should definitely study it and find out what happens when they are all disillusioned and find out that they're believing a fantasy. And at that was the moment when I realized, oops, I think I believe them. And for me, there's a spiritual community that is arising from the grassroots of all over the world. I've been all over the world. And people will literally run up to me and say, you know, Eckhart Tolle is a new earth, you know it? Is that what we're doing? And I'll be like, yeah. And they'll say, I'm so glad I met you. And I'll say, me too. Who are you? And they'll say, I don't know. Who are you? There's a spiritual community forming spontaneously all over the globe. And that's why we're doing this program. People are experiencing this stuff, and we need them to know you're not alone. But it's a grassroots phenomenon that appears to be coming from some kind of source that is external to any single human life. So it's totally different from any type of religion or organization that I've ever heard of before.
It's almost like you're saying this one-on-one, almost like a magnetic pull of people who are experiencing this awakening.
Exactly.
Are being pulled together. And that's so interesting because I was just reading earlier, Lisa, when you were in Peru, you were. Can you relate that story about the condor and the eagle?
Yeah, sure.
Because it's such it's very parallel to what we're talking about.
Yeah, I was up at 16,000 feet in the Andes at a Cara village. I was one of the few Westerners that was invited into this community, and I was living in a little hut with about 10 other people sleeping on a little straw mattress with my friend Dennis, and we were working with with these shamans, I was there studying a book that I'm writing called Sacred Medicine about anomalous healing. And I was sitting, we were sitting there with these two shamans, this man and the oldest woman in the Keros, who's over 100. Nobody's quite sure how old she is. Her name is Cipriana. So I was sitting there with Mariano and Cipriana, and they were telling us the story about the condor and the eagle. And this story got told to us multiple times by multiple people while I was in Peru. I kept hearing the story, and it was based on an Incan prophecy where the condor, which is a ubiquitous bird in the Sacred Valley in Peru, and the condor was believed to represent this Incan civilization of sort of the indigenous wisdom of these people. And the eagle was thought to represent sort of modernization, kind of North American culture. And there was this prophecy that the eagle people would come in and oppress the condor people for 500 years. But that after 500 years, the condor and the eagle would fly together, and the eagle people would be coming to the condor people to learn the wisdom that the condor people would be protecting. And this was why this tribe moved up to 16,000 feet in the Andes to escape from the oppression of the Spanish conquistadors, so that they could protect their culture. And they've been waiting for the eagle people to be ready. At a certain time in human evolution, the prophecy said, the eagle people would be ready to learn this wisdom. And at that point, this precious wisdom that had been stored in the wisdom of the elders in this tribe would be shared with the eagle people. So they were so excited that Dennis and I were there, because they were like, you all are the eagle people, and you're here to disseminate the wisdom of the condor people, because now is the time. This is the time. The 500 years have passed, and it is almost exactly 500 years from when this was happening in Peru, of this oppression by the Spanish conquistadors. And they said, now is the time where everybody's going to wake up, and you guys are going to need what it is that we know in order to be able to make this process of evolution smooth, so that we can all save the planet. Because Pachamama, which is they worship the divine feminine in the form of Mother Earth, Pachamama, and the mountains, the divine masculine in the form of the mountains, the Apus. And they said, you know, the Apus and Pachamama are dependent on the condor and the eagle coming together in spiritual community, essentially, creating what Martha calls the team, so that we can save the planet. No biggie.
No biggie. But everybody.
This is not in your typical self-help book.
It's like God of Earth help. You know, it's like this whole magnetic thing. I was imagining while you're talking, Melissa, that the condor and the eagle, like, just, you know, magnetically just being attracted and flying along together like that.
Right.
And it's a beautiful picture. And
I was so excited because, you know, this tribe basically was isolated from any modernization until the 1950s, when they were found by an anthropologist. And I was telling them about Big Sur. I just got back from Big Sur this weekend. I was at Esalen teaching and then taking a workshop with Byron Katie. And the condors are in Big Sur. They're endangered, but I saw several. And I was telling the people in Peru, oh, yeah, I've seen the condors in Big Sur. And they were so excited. They said, it's coming true. The condors are flying next to the eagles.
It's so beautiful when you see it reflected in physical reality like that. That's amazing.
Hmm.
Along that, you know, along these same lines, when we're dealing with trying to create our own spiritual life outside of what we've been taught, and we're trying to, like you were saying, you know, self-helper, we just keep self-helping, and when we're trying to do this, you know, what are some spiritual practices that people can use in their everyday life that can help connect them to, you know, whatever you're gonna call it, God, the God of Earth, Source, Spirit. What do you guys use is one question, and on a daily or weekly basis. And the second question is, you know, what would you recommend for someone else to use spiritual practices?
Well, I have had the experience of chronic pain, as you have too, Reba.
Yes.
And I know Lissa is a doctor and has written extensively about this, but the interesting thing is that most religions in the West especially separate the spirit from the body and call the body evil and the spirit good.
Yeah.
Actually, I believe that your body is a tool of creation that is more honest than your mind, than the mental ego. So what happened to me is that after 12 years of hellacious chronic pain, I started to recognize that I was being steered by my own body. When I was doing things that were health, that were they were odd for me, but they created a sense of opening and calming and spiritual growth, what I now call spiritual growth. My body, the physical symptoms got better. And when I went in a way or believed in a way that was not useful for me, my body would first get tense, then get exhausted, then start to get very, very sick. And I was very, very sick. And I know Linda was too, in addition to being a physician.
And I was too. Yeah.
So the very first thing, yeah, you guys could tell your stories too, but for me it was like, pay attention to your body, and instead of thinking that your body is evil and must be overcome, you open yourself to the idea that when you relax, it's because you're moving in the direction that's right for you and believing the truth. And when you feel yourself tightening physically, just notice the tightening. When you're with a person, when you're doing a certain activity, when you're going somewhere, you'll feel tightness in the body versus relaxation in the body. To me, this is like the game of you're getting warmer, you're getting colder, and it always, always, always guides people to, it'll take you all the way through the first levels of self-help, all the way to now you're sitting in a hut in the Andes listening to someone talk about condors and eagles. It will steer you anywhere, and you never misplace your body, so there you have it.
So listen to your body.
Yeah, just
as
learn to
practice.
Feel. And when I coach people, they'll say, okay, I'll do anything to get out of my suffering. And I'll say, okay, first thing we're going to do is feel what you feel in your body. And they're like, oh, now this is getting all woo. I did not sign up for this. It's your body, dude. It's the least woo-woo thing about you. And our culture is so negative toward it because it threatens the ego when you start to listen to the signals that are coming from the body, which I believe is in league with your spirit. And that's not good for the ego. So our culture fights it tooth and nail. But
well,
that's what we got to do.
And I love that practice, Martha, and I've learned so much from you about using the body as a compass in that way. And I there's been several other practices that I've used that also sort of deal with the ego and its grasp on wanting what it wants and feeling like it needs to be in control and it needs to protect us and it needs to be afraid in order to keep us safe. One of them has been the work of Tosha Silver, which is, it's basically a practice of what she calls offering. She wrote a book called Outrageous Openness,
mm-hmm.
and this practice has been really, really helpful for me, where every time, it's gotten to the point where it's knee-jerk. In the beginning, I would forget all the time, and now I still have to remind myself, but I'll do this 20 times a day, where my ego wants something. It wants people to behave a certain way. It wants something to happen in my professional life. You know, it has a whole list, like a laundry list of desires. And it also has a laundry list of problems that need to be solved, things that aren't the way they should be, and my ego is supposed to fix them. And the minute I identify one of those things, and it can be something very simple, but the minute I identify it, to practice this practice of offering, which basically is taking that desire or problem and surrendering it, turning it over as an offering, as a Not as a, like, giving it to God, like giving God a shopping list, the way the law of attraction or, you know, these kinds of teachings are, but literally making an offering to the divine to say, here's my problem or here's my desire. Help me bring into being that which is in the highest good and help me let go of that which isn't. So if this is meant to become, help use the Godiverse to make it easeful. And if it's not meant to become, if it's not aligned with the highest good, if this isn't what's best for me and the planet and everybody involved, then change me into somebody who doesn't want that anymore or who isn't suffering over the struggle of trying to solve this problem. And talk about tuning to the frequency of miracles. There's something about that practice of offering that makes miraculous things happen. They're not always what my ego wants. So it's not about, oh, I want a Ferrari and all of a sudden there's a Ferrari in my driveway. But it's like I want somebody to behave differently. And all of a sudden, without me even making the phone call, they're picking up the phone and saying exactly what I wanted to hear. Or I'm changing so that I no longer want them to behave that way. and I'm able to love and accept them and have compassion for them exactly the way they are. And it's miracle after miracle, and it's been so soothing. It's eased a lot of suffering for me and taken away, I dare to say, almost all of my anxiety and fear.
I did that right before I got on the phone. I did. It's in my journal next to my notes. I just said, I am surrendering this to the magic of the Godiverse.
Oh, my goodness. I did
it right before. It's just so funny because it's like these are universal principles that you guys are teaching, but because you have been there, you have done it, and it manifests everywhere, even here in Ohio. I'm in Cincinnati. So I think that's important for people to realize that, you know, it's all, I like to say, like, you know, the Godiverse meets you where you are, as you are, no matter who you are, because it's not like, you know, it's unique to you, Martha, or you, Lissa. Like, it's all there for all of us. So those are beautiful things, and listening to your body has been an amazing tool for me as well, Martha. It's gotten me on the path I'm on. Like, literally, I'm sitting in the chair talking to you because of doing that.
Yeah.
In my Finding Your Own North Star journal. So thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I also want to make a note about the fact that both Martha and I do have a meditation practice.
When we
talk about practices, I think that the act of just sitting with oneself and being willing to actually acknowledge the stories that are going on in our mind and to pay attention to the breath and notice what the ego is saying all the time, you know, starts, even if you're just doing that for a few minutes every day, something starts to change that you don't have to actually do anything. Yeah. It starts to do you in a way that is hard to explain.
Yeah, and that's not where I usually go. When I usually start people with, I found that audiences respond better to, let's feel our feet than to, let's sit for an hour in total silence. But here's a weird little thing that's come out of my meditation practice, and I just thought, I might as well tell the people. I send up prayers a lot, you know, and you talk at the Godiverse, you call the Godiverse or whatever. There's a stillness that came up when I started meditating for hours at a time instead of minutes.
Yeah.
And it's so deep and so powerful and so beautiful that I was having a little bit of a frantic day one day, and I said, please, stillness, help me. And I started to pray to the word, not to the concept of stillness. And it's so weird. Every time I do that, stuff starts manifesting so fast. It's like, I don't think it's like the name of God or whatever. It just primes me to a very different frequency than anxiety and grasping. And so when I'm in the middle of something and it's hard and I stop and I say, I'm offering this to stillness.
Mm.
For some reason, our culture thinks that stillness is invisible or icky. In a recent study, these people were given either 15 minutes to sit by themselves in silence, or they had a button where they could give themselves a painful electric shock. And one of the researchers says, why are we even doing this? Nobody's going to shock themselves. There's no upside. Almost everyone shocked themselves. One person shocked himself over 190 times rather than sit quietly. But when you start talking to stillness and you start feeling it and the texture of this intense peace, I mean deep, deep, loving, indescribable peace, when you start speaking to it, thinking about it, turning your attention to it, it's real. It starts paying off. It's as close to a magical spell as anything I've ever stumbled across. So there, I've never told anyone that. Now I've told you.
I was going to say, I didn't know that.
I've never said that to anyone.
I just love that. Thank you so much for sharing it, Martha. You know, it reminds me, now that I can use the Bible again, there was about a decade that I couldn't, but now that I can, I'm reminded of the verse, which is, you know, be still and know that I am God. And just the truth that I found in that, the stillness. And I love the idea of centering your mind on that concept of stillness, because I think it's like stilling is almost a prerequisite to knowing. Like you have to do it in order to.
Yeah,
to
you really actually can't put your mind into a space of stillness because the mind has to stop for it to be still. But the word still can start to prime that reaction, and it's actually in the spaces where the mind is quiet that the power of creation is working with you. So be still and know that I am God is not God speaking and saying, you are small, look at me and know that I'm God. It's the best way that that scriptorian had of conceptualizing the experience of realizing that in the stillness, we are all everything.
Yes, yes, absolutely. That's going to be a wonderful thing for some of the people. A lot of my readers are, you know, have been so spiritually damaged, and yeah. You know, to understand that they have the ability to look at something like that and redefine it for themselves, and know that that's what it can mean. It doesn't have to mean what somebody else told them.
Martha, I love how you talk about peace as our home address.
Yeah.
And when I think about my own kind of religious upbringing, it's remarkable. I was going to church, you know, two or three times a week, and I was raised in a family with three Methodist ministers, and so very much post-traumatic church, but peace was never a part of that experience. Mm. I remember as a child, every now and then, maybe being, you know, on my knees at the altar and having just a glimpse, like just a couple of seconds of sensing something. But mostly what I sensed was judgment, was like the opposite of peace. It was, you're not good enough unless you fill in the blank, all the ways in which I wasn't good enough because I wasn't following the rules, or I was following the rules, but I wasn't abiding by them well enough, and I was a good girl, so I was doing everything I could to get approval from, you know, God and everybody in church and all of that. But Martha, I love what you tell about that home address of peace. Can you speak
sure.
to that? Because it really is, I think, the opposite of religion for a lot of people.
Yeah, and just, you know, we know now that there are tens of thousands of cases of near-death experiences, and people encounter love, but they never ever say that they were sent to hell or that they were judged harshly ever. So
why?
It's like anxiety and stress. Certainly my religion did that to me growing up.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It's like peace is the actual substance of the soul, of the spirit, of the God force that is in all of us. And so everything you've prayed for your whole life, I always feel this when I'm working with a client, everything they've prayed for has been granted to them, every single thing. It's all delivered. But the place God delivers the answers to your prayers is your real address, which is peace.
Mm.
So if you're in frenzy or neediness or desperation, all the prayers are being answered, but you've got to go home to get your packages.
Oh, I love that.
And the moment you go still, this is why meditation is so powerful. I'm not thinking about God or any. I'm just being still, and the peace enters, or I enter peace, or I realize that peace is always there, and suddenly, boom, like things I prayed for when I was five start coming at me, and that's why there's this incredible banquet of miracles that happens when you start to get still, because if you've asked for them in the past, they're already waiting for you in peace. They're already waiting in stillness, and every second you spend in that peace, they're coming for you. It becomes, we were talking earlier, your life becomes an overwhelming experience of gratitude, inexpressible gratitude and peace. And that's kind of all that's left after a certain point.
Mm. I love it. I'm just imagining a little package, you know, waiting for you. Waiting
a little package. I mean, there are stacks.
Yeah, I mean,
there are
lots of little packages, of big packages. Lots.
Huge. Everything. There are ponies. I mean, my God, you have no idea what's in there. It's almost a joke. I mean, I used to go to my grandmother's house and watch Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom because we didn't have a television, and all I wanted to do was watch these African animals. Then I grew up. I got sick. I was bedridden for 12 years. I never thought I would ever go anywhere. And now, long story short, every year I spend a month in an African wilderness game preserve, taking people into encounters with, you know, lions and leopards and elephants. It's like, it was just the cosmic wink. Here's what you prayed for your whole childhood. You want to really see what this is like? Let's go to Wild Kingdom, kiddo. You know, and I'm physically well, and I'm safe and actually making money by indulging this incredible passion for the African wilderness. That's just one example.
Well, I got to warn you, Martha, I've got another vision board that has, like, me and you in the jungle. So
get ready, girl.
Go to Pete. He's waiting for you there.
I just got back from Africa with Martha, so get ready.
Get ready. I love it. Okay, so not really switching gears, but moving on to a little bit, how would you define the concept of, like, spiritual health? You know, it's not something that we talk a lot about. We talk mental health, we talk physical health, we talk emotional health, we talk sexual health. And then spiritual health is sort of like the thing that gets, it's like, you know, the leg of the barstool that gets missed, and so we're unbalanced. How would you guys define, like, spiritual health? How does it look? How does it feel? How does it act? I know we've covered some of those components already, but if you could just expound on that a little bit, I think it would be great.
Well, listen, I know you've written all about this. You know, you're the doctor, so give us the prescription.
Well, I have multiple answers to that, so I'll start by sort of answering as the doctor. But as the doctor, for me, spiritual health is peace. It is physiologically in the body, the state of the nervous system being in the relaxation response, because we know that the body is miraculously equipped. I mean, the body is simply God incarnate experiencing God's self, which is everything. So it's all everything, right? The Godiverse is everything. And so the Godiverse created this body that's a miracle. And this miraculous body is brilliantly equipped with self-healing mechanisms that fix the body all the time. We know this. This is this is not woo-woo. This is in our medical school textbooks, that every day we make cancer cells and we fight cancer. And every day we're exposed to bacteria and viruses and fungi, and we have natural anti-infection machines in our body called the immune system. And every day proteins break and we have natural anti-aging mechanisms, and there's, you know, all these things in play to kind of keep things in their homeostatic state. And what happens is when the body's in stress response, which is fear, anxiety, disappointment, frustration, suffering, these states of being that so many people in dominant culture are living in 24/7. You know, on average, we have about 50 stress responses per day. And so whenever that's the case, then the body is, these self-healing mechanisms are deactivated, and the body can't be healthy. So on one level, spiritual health is when we're able to live in relaxation response, where the nervous system is relaxed and we're in that state of peace that Martha was helping us actually feel.
Yeah.
And that's part of what we're hoping to do in this course, is not just teach the mind, but help people access what does it feel like to really be in spiritual health, to really be embody the relaxation response in our nervous system.
But could I add something here?
Yeah.
I also think it's part of a healthy spirit when you are not getting the spiritual nourishment that is sort of your heritage as a being. It's also healthy to feel a longing, a yearning. Mm. Patricia Hempel, who's a beautiful spiritual writer, says that the evidence of God for a modern mind is longing. And so it's kind of like a healthy body gets full and it gets hungry. Right? And when it's full, there's peace. Yeah. And when it's hungry, there's an intense yearning. But that's healthy. And what happens to make us sick is, say, we get an intense yearning for spiritual fulfillment, and we say, I got to triple my antidepressant. And we get to the point, or we start drinking too much, or numbing out with sex or something. Numbness is as close as you can get to physical spiritual brokenness. Mm. But the natural impulse of the spirit to move back into either yearning or finding and being satisfied, it's so strong. It's that those mechanisms are so powerful, because that's what we're here to do, to get lost in the world of the physical and to have the spiritual self bring itself back into harmony while still in the flesh. So pretty much everybody's healthy all the time. You've just got to feel what you're actually feeling. And it will take you right back into the pursuit of peace, and then into the peace itself.
Well, and that concept of spiritual health, like I said, I sort of answered it from the physiologic perspective, but on another dimension, I think we're all just yearning for connection.
Mm-hmm.
And so that concept of spiritual nourishment that you're talking about, Martha, is so essential. We're yearning for connection with one another, because if we're all God incarnate, wanting to experience God's self, then we want to do it. We want to connect with others and animals and plants and nature. It's all wanting to experience itself through our eyes and in us. But we're also wanting to sort of connect with the transcendent.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the experiences that help us nourish that, and we're going to be talking about some of those, but all of those experiences that help us feel that, feel deeply satisfying in a way that everything that the ego is grasping after can't ever make you do. So we make up these stories that, like, oh, I'm finally going to feel fulfilled and happy if I meet the love of my life, I make millions of dollars, I'm doing a job that, you know, that makes me feel important, I'm, you know, all the things that dominant culture teaches us is required for happiness. And yet these people that I was just hanging out with in the Keros, on many levels, we might say that they're poverty-stricken. They have almost nothing that we in this culture value. And yet that sense of connection with nature and one another and the transcendent is happening 24/7 in their lives. They're not separated from it at all. And they're so peaceful and fulfilled. It was beautiful to feel the frequency of what it felt like to be in a community where that was normalized.
And that's the piece that you didn't find in your, or that you only found fleeting moments of in your
in
the church. Yeah, the church that you were raised in. I think, you know, it's that longing, Martha, that you were talking about. We're taught that that's a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like, you know, the longing, because it's fulfilled, it's going to take you past some of those boundaries, and so
right.
You know, we're taught that's bad. But if that, you know, if we can follow that longing, and it'll, I think what you're saying is it'll basically lead us home.
It's certainly, as a compass is pulled magnetically north, it's a law of the fundamental universe. It can't be stopped. It can be stalled by our belief in illusion, our fear, our sense that we are just physical bodies and that we need to be afraid of everything. But, you know, we were talking earlier, Liz and I, about how enlightenment has occurred to people who've sat in caves and meditated for 20 years. And it's happened to people who are complete scumbags, who are just walking down the street suffering and had a breakthrough. It's like it will pull you back into alignment as fast as you will let it. End of story. As fast as your deep self will accept wholeness, it is given to you. Bang. Go to peace. There it is. Your life will never be the same.
I loved, you know, when we were in Africa, Martha, and we were watching that jaguar. I forget if you were in the...
It couldn't have been
the
a
leopard,
jaguar.
Sorry, the leopard.
Very lost jaguar.
That's right. We were watching the leopard stalking the impala.
Yeah.
And I think of enlightenment like that. Like, it's stalking us. We don't have to do anything to go get it.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
It's just waiting for us to surrender to it, to let it take us over.
Yep.
That wasn't
like
necessarily the best
eating.
Metaphor, since it sounds like getting eaten. But
no, but it is like getting eaten.
It
I had
like
an encounter with an African shaman. It was so bizarre. You know, I had a dream. I told some friends. They were like, oh, my God, if you have that dream in our culture, you have to see the shaman. And she told me several years ago, you've got to learn about the ancient people, and you've got to start spreading the knowledge of that we have among the white people of the modern world. And it was so... It was such a strange experience because it felt terrifying and yet peaceful at the same time. And that night I had a dream that a leopard was trying to eat me. And that is, I didn't know this, but I found out later, that is the dream that you have when you're, like, you set out on the shaman's path. And I had it over and over again. It was so vivid. And then I finally realized, if I'm going to get rid of this, I have to let it eat me. So I went into the dream and I let it eat me. And I really do feel like, I think I put this in the book I wrote about this, that love is hunting you right now, and it will have nothing but itself. It has to be with itself, and it will never stop hunting you. And the moment you relax, the longing for love will bring it to you. And yeah, you'll feel like you're getting eaten alive. Your ego will be all crazy. You won't know, I'm not fitting in with my friends anymore. What will my old religion think? And that's one reason we're doing this course, is that people need that new community in which everybody is being pulled by their innate sense of spirituality and then agreeing without judgment to support each other, whatever happens. You know, if you get too crazy, we'll pull you back. But more likely than not, we're getting eaten by the yeah, leopard of love ourselves. So we'll be like, yeah, so that happens all the time. What are you talking about?
Well, and I think the important, yeah, for sure. I think that part, that community piece, is really important, because in dominant culture, we're kind of surrounded by a lot of people that are projecting their own fears or their own resistance onto us. And it makes it that much harder. We have our own ego that's trying to hold us back and keep us from getting eaten by love. And it makes it that much harder when we also have to fight the 20 other forces that are trying to pull us away from the love that just wants to engulf us. So it becomes much easier when we can all entrain one another, where we're all dropping into that state of peace and making a group agreement that we're going to let ourselves get eaten by love, and we're going to let one another get eaten by love, and we're not going to stop you. We're going to hold you, and we're going to comfort you if you need it. If your ego needs reassurance, we're going to be here. But we're not going to stop the evolution of what's happening. It's gonna happen anyway. It's just we're trying to create a container so that it can happen more easily and more quickly if it wants to.
And that's why I wanted to do this today, because I fully believe, 100 gazillion percent in what you guys are doing and the message that you're spreading, because I've lived it. And
it's so interesting, Reba. I'm sorry to interrupt, but we have never met you and we have never talked to you. But both of us are talking completely openly with full confidence that you're right there with us, because we've had the experience of encountering other people on the path. And so I just wanted to check in quickly and say, is this all crazy to you, or do you already recognize it, even though we have never spoken to you before?
Oh, I'm really having a hard time holding things back, because I just want to tell my own story, and I'm here to interview you guys. I mean, okay, here's how deep this rabbit hole goes. When I was researching Lissa, that condor eagle story stuck out to me, because my shaman is Peruvian, and our group here in Ohio is actually called the Condor Eagle Chapter of the Nemenha.
No way.
I am not lying. Shout out to Chief Iggy Hoopwatcher, who is my guy. He's in my book.
Oh my goodness.
He's read chapters. He was there. Like, he gave me my name. Like, this is wild. And, you know, what's amazing is because, so I'm like this, sorry, I'm just, it's all coming out. But I'm like in this progressive Christian voice type of thing right now, is what I'm being drawn into, which I never thought the church wanted anything to do with me. But that's where I'm at. And the funny thing is that I'm like, you know, I'm doing the same thing there, I hope, is bringing some of these things. Like, I have, like, the peacock is like my spirit animal, and it's going to be on the cover of my book, and it means resurrection, and it's, you know, associated with the phoenix. So that is the long answer, Martha. Not only do I not think you're crazy, I want to fly to California and just be there with you guys, because I it's ineffable.
Okay, you asked what I thought a spiritual community was. For anyone who's listening to this, this is what a spiritual
this
community
is.
Is.
I was thinking that too. I was thinking that too. It only takes a few, and or one, you know, sometimes. And I have that experience all the time where I'm, you know, on an airplane or who knows, you know, wherever you are, and you have this, like, we used to call it in Christian culture, divine encounters, a term that I have reclaimed for myself and still really like. We have these beautiful things. So I would like to cover, before we stop recording, it is the title of my book, but you both laughed when I said it. So I have to know, when I said post-traumatic stress syndrome, what did it trigger for both of you, respectively? That might be a whole other conversation.
Yeah, I wrote a memoir about leaving Mormonism, because there are beautiful gems of wisdom in Mormonism, and then there are things that I felt were just not compatible with my path. And that's really fun. There are probably millions of people who think that I am worse than a murderer, because leaving the church is seen as a sin worse than murder. And I'm sorry they feel that way, but I really, at a certain point, if you keep caring about that, everybody's spiritual adventures stop, and that's no fun. And so I just want to tell you that I went through a really rough version of it. I mean, really rough, where I was public enough about it to get a lot of hate mail, a lot of threats, a lot of things. And you know what? It is to be spiritually free. One of the things that I learned along the way is that usually when you hear something frightening, the opposite of it is the truth. And so I was told many times, you know, we're going to put you in prison. You're going to be in prison for the rest of your life if you publish this bad book about the church. And what I heard was, we're going to let you out of prison for the rest of your life if you publish this terrible book.
A terrible book that saved me, Martha. I can't tell you how many times.
So there you go. It was worth everything just to hear one person say that. It truly, truly was. And I was following that. I was following my compasses. I was taking the next step forward. I couldn't explain why I was doing it. Not for any particular, I didn't have an image of gain. And in fact, it was financially ruinous to write that book. It just was time. And I was told, you'll be in captivity, you'll be destroyed. And instead it has been, you'll be in freedom and you'll be recreated. And so to anyone who's going through that, I'm just sending you my love and telling you, there are a lot of people who've walked that terrible path, and we're fine. We're better than fine.
I know for me, a lot of the journey has been that I left the church because of all the judgment. It was really confusing to me, because here I had Jewish friends that I thought were good Jews doing what good Jews do, and I was being told that they're all going to hell. And then I had gay friends, and I was being told that gay people were not doing what God wanted people to do in the bedroom, and this made no sense to my child self. I was very confused by this. And so I ended up, but here, this was the big aha for me. I left the church because I was judging the church.
Yes, we have to talk about that.
And so the real turnaround for me came when where I was able to get to a place where I realized I was doing the very thing to the people in the church that they had done to others. And it was kind of an ego meltdown for me to come to peace with that and to get to a place where I was able to really open to compassion for the people that were in the church that were doing the very best they can to be good human beings and to connect with Source and to spread the teachings and to find peace and to be in community and all of that, and to have room for all of us to be on our spiritual journeys, however that looks, without judgment, no matter what.
Mm-hmm. Amen.
May I please share with you guys how I see that?
Yeah.
Sure, please.
So I did, and back to your craziness question, Martha, I sort of did this, like, fast for 30 days. when I was really sick, you know, I was desperate to get well, and it was spiritual, it was physical, it was a lot of different things. But I do not recommend anyone undertaking that. But at the end of that time, I was at the Buddhist temple, and I was meditating, and I left my body and saw a disco ball. Now, I'm not sure how many people leave their bodies and see a disco ball. But what I understood in that moment was literally like exactly what you were saying. I cannot be love if I am judging like others have judged me, which is exactly where I was. And so what I saw was like this disco ball is this way of understanding that there's room for us all. And whoever is, you know, I've got, you know, family members and a lot of other people who are judging me, they're just on the other side of the disco ball. They have their own little mirror. They have their own little light to reflect. I don't have to like it. I don't have to understand it. I don't even really have to put up with them because they're on the other side. But for me to be able to say, okay, I can accept this because it's bigger than I can see. And that was the turning point for me, period, in my spiritual life. And so I just had to share that with you guys when you were talking about the, you know, stop judging, start loving, because it has to start with us, each of us.
Well, you used the key, what I think is the key word, which is accept.
Mm-hmm.
And I just got back from a workshop where I was a student in Byron Katie's workshop. You know, so her work is all about loving and accepting what is and how much of our suffering comes from resisting what is. This is how the world is. This is how it is. And yet, you know, we're constantly fighting what is. And so I think that place of acceptance is often a place of deep peace, and it's not about passivity, and it's not about not taking inspired action to make the world a different place, to evolve the world together, but to do it from a place of peace is a very different energy than to do it from a place of fighting or resisting or judgment. And I think it's a place of ease where that frequency of miracles we were talking about starts to come into play. And things just seem to start to change without having to fight or resist it. And I've learned so much about that from you, Martha. You've really, really helped me with that.
I wasn't trying.
I mean, like when I came back from Africa and I was having a little tantrum about the Zimbabwe refugee camp and how it wasn't right that these refugees were in there. And Martha was like, Lissa, all you have to do just come into that frequency of peace. And on some level, that helps the refugees. And my ego is saying, no, it's not. I need to, like, go into the refugee camp. And Martha's like, go ahead, make them breakfast. Go save them, you know. And that can be misconstrued easily. But there's a deep wisdom in the teachings that I've gotten from Martha around that dropping into a state of peace as its own form of activism.
Mm-hmm. Then it will move you to action. Like the way I wrote that book, I was like, but I don't need to write this. This is going to be perceived as polemical and evil and activism, and that's not why I wrote it. But that's where I ended up having to do that to be in peace. And I'll do anything it takes to stay in peace. Full stop.
Right.
And coming at activism from that perspective is very, very, very different.
Mm. Yeah.
What a beautiful word. Jeez. Is there anything, before we wrap up, anything that either of you, that we didn't cover, that you'd like to say to, you know, anyone who is speaking or they're going through, like, the deconstruction that happens when they're in, you know, spiritual damage, spiritual injury? You know, they're in a place of brokenness. You know, is there anything you want to say to them that we didn't cover?
I would say, think of the thing you most long to hear. Write down what you would hear from God if it were the absolute best possible thing that would comfort you, the absolute most you can think of. Write it down and then reread it, because that's what God is saying to you.
I love that.
I would say that there's no such thing as spiritual brokenness. And I think it's possible to get to a place where we're able to really recognize, kind of on a soul level, that adversity on a soul level is something that we've chosen as a way to grow. And Martha and I were just talking about this before the call. Like, what if our souls and God sat down before we were born and we were like, okay, in this lifetime, I want to be on the fast track. I want to be on the fast track to becoming God consciousness in human form in this life. How can I do that? And Martha was saying, well, you know, they would say, like, the training for that's a bitch. You know,
you might probably not make it.
Right? You might not make it. You might not survive it. The training for that, if that's what you want in this lifetime, the training for that might look like child abuse and you know, rape, sexual molestation. It might look like getting divorced three times, being rejected by your mother. It might look like being at the mercy of an oppressive church culture. It might look like all kinds of failure. It might look like addiction. Are you really willing to take that on if the outcome is you get to become God consciousness in human form in one lifetime? And the soul is like, yes, bring it on. And they're like, no, we don't know if you're going to make it. You know, and you're
that's
like,
That's the only worldview that's ever made sense to me. It's the only thing that's ever made sense, that, like, we made some type of agreement. And I've never heard it articulated exactly that way. Yeah. I love you guys so much. Love it.
So the whole idea of spiritual brokenness, it's like, no, your soul chose to break your ego. That's it.
And that can be very revolutionary, you know?
It all comes from love, and it all goes back to love.
Well, I feel like that is a beautiful place to end. If there's, you know, not anything else that either of you guys would like to add.
My little marketing self just wants to let anybody know who's interested in participating in this program that we're doing, that cominghometoyourspirit.com is where you can read more about the program, and it's really just meant to be an invitation to the highest part of you. Like, if the highest part of you feels like, you know, you may not even know why you're inclined to do this, but if it feels like you're ready for this, then we invite you to join us in this soul community.
And I will be there.
Yay.
I will absolutely
Woo-hoo.
Be there.
Yay.
are you kidding? I'm not going to miss this.
Yay.
Thank you both. This is just an honor and a blessing and a privilege. And this is my pony on the doorstep, Martha.
You're easy.
Yeah.
I'm easy.